course, you really love the interview with Carl Taylor, right? This is the Fashion Photography Podcast. My name is Virginia Wai. I'm a fashion advertising photographer, and I do this podcast along with the gorgeous producer, George. We're here for the third part of our interview with Carl Taylor. He's an amazing photographer and educator, and you can find the previous two parts of our conversation on photographypodcast.net. Today, we'll continue our conversation about assistants, and we're going to talk a little bit about interns and getting an assistant job and how you can almost guarantee this for yourself with just a few very easy steps. At the same time, we're talking about switching roles and what it'd be for both of us if for a day we take the role of the other one. I would love to also hear your opinion on what it's going to look like in our Facebook group called Fashion Photography Lovers. Do you think it's going to be a disaster? Or do you think it's going to be hell of a fun? Share your scenario in the Facebook group and let's all laugh together a little. Anyways, this is not the only topic today. We also talk about the serious stuff like skipping steps from your photography education and do you even ever stop learning about photography? Okay, I don't want to waste your time. Let me just tell you before the start of the interview about our friends from Lucy's Magazine. They are waiting for your next beauty or fashion editorial, and their submission guidelines are linked in the show notes on photographypodcast.net. And now it's time for an interview. And I think there is also this misunderstanding on the market. Many people are going for the assisting job when they have no knowledge. Or very little.
That doesn't make any sense to me because it just seems so common sense to have to know a few things. I mean, that's like me going to NASA and saying I want to be an assistant astronaut or astrophysicist, but I know nothing about it, you know, or very little about it. So it's just dumb. But surely if you're going to, you want to do that, then make sure you know what lights they're using and what brand. Then go and rent some or use some so you get familiar with them so that you're not looking like an idiot when you're in the studio. You know, you have to be able to offer something.
Absolutely.
No one's going to take you on as an assistant if they've got to train you as well as do their job, because that's not what they want an assistant for. So it just seems logical to me that if you're looking for assisting work, that you would try and discover some of the basics that need to be known for the job.
It seems like many people are forgetting the term intern and they're just going straight for the assistant. So if you guys don't have any type of knowledge, as Carl said, you can just rent the light or go for the intern job. You expect no payment from it, but, you know, people pay for what they get. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, the intern job would be more of a sort of observer role to begin with. And then once you've observed and you've learned, but you know, you can learn a lot to make yourself a lot more useful even before you go for the intern job.
Absolutely.
And the more you are willing to do that, then the more likely you are to be recognized as being useful. And that's what leads to actually getting a job, is if you can make yourself more useful.
Yeah, people really appreciate that. So you're basically working for someone. You want to impress them, right?
Yeah, exactly.
What is, in your opinion, the thing that seems really easy about photography, but it's actually quite hard?
I don't want to sound big-headed here, but I kind of often forget my level of knowledge of light and lighting. And for me, I can pretty much look at any photograph. I know how it was lit. I know what was used. I know what type of modifier. I know I could reproduce any photograph that someone says to me, how was that done? If it was, certainly if it didn't have post-production on it and it was the pure photograph, I'll know how to reproduce it within a minute. But for a lot of other people, they struggle with that. They don't fully understand lighting enough that they can know what type of lighting they're actually seeing in the picture, because they don't know the visual clues for how light reacts texturally, how it reacts in reflectance, how it reacts in luminosity. They don't understand the density of the shadows. They don't understand the global illumination, the fill light, negative fill. There are many aspects to do with lighting to do with the shape of the light, the direction of light, the energy of the light that is directed forwards rather than dispersed, the inverse square law, many factors, even to do with the color of light as well. And for me, it's second nature. And fortunately, I can explain this very clearly, but I have to remind myself that people don't have that in their brain yet. So this is why I think I've been successful as an educator, is because what I do is I take a piece of that information and I give them the piece of information they need to know first. And then sometimes I get clever clogs people who say, oh yeah, but you didn't tell them about that, or you didn't tell them about that. And I say, yeah, that's right, I didn't tell them about that, because they're not ready for that yet. And that's an important part of being an educator, is recognizing when too much information becomes overwhelming. And it's important to impart the information, certainly on complex issues like lighting, at the right amount of information in one session. And then in the next session, you move on to some of those other fundamentals, and the next set and the next set. But if you throw everything at them and all angles and all different things, then they become overwhelmed and none of the information is absorbed. You have to be very careful when delivering information that you're not only delivering the right information, but you're delivering the right amount of information, because sometimes too much information can be a negative as well.
I absolutely agree with this. For example, I went salsa dancing a few years ago. Yeah. And there is this thing, people get knowledge in different stages, in different ways. And sometimes I can absorb more information than other people, and sometimes it's the other way around. Mm. So if you skip a step or two, it looks like, at least to you, that you can do the job and you can finish the dance and you're probably going to do it. However, you can hurt yourself. In this situation, we talk physically, but when we talk about photography, we talk about long-term abuse of your photography. Because if you skip a step, you can still continue photographing.
Yeah.
But for example, this is going to lead you to lack of clients. This is going to lead you to lack of revenue.
Even. Yeah, well, it's very interesting, because what you just said there about skipping a step, because we also train many professional photographers, and I've met professional photographers, I can't name them, I've met professional photographers who are known and considered knowledgeable. And I've even seen with some of them that they're missing a certain fundamental piece of information that they didn't really understand properly, that was leading them to do something in an inefficient way. I've had many professional photographers on my workshops or on my education platform. I've said to them, do you know that if you understood this one thing here, and I said, right, we're going to look at this. And then they realized that it's not their fault, but the reason is that they mislearned it early on. So they either skipped this bit of vital information, or they didn't understand it properly at the time. And they've been continuing for another 5 or 10 years without that bit of information and trying to get around it. Mm-hmm. And it's very interesting when you recognize that some photographers that are considerably experienced photographers, they were actually missing some fundamental parts of information that was making their job more difficult for them to do.
It's very interesting, the time that we live in, because before, you were just able to take a step back and take a look at all of the options that you have. And there were not that many. And now you're in a pool of options. You're surrounded by them. And it's very hard to make the decision what's right for you and what's wrong. And sometimes you get misled and you simply think that this is the right thing, but it's really not.
That can happen, you know. It just really comes down to how willing you are to keep learning and accept, even myself, is be willing to accept that you do not know everything.
Yeah.
There are still things that can appear that can surprise you. And as long as you keep an open mind and a curious mind, then you can still develop. But if you make an assumption that you know everything, then you don't have an open door anymore to let new information in.
Yeah, the more information you have, the easier it becomes to understand what's valuable and what's not, and what's easy and what's not. So I wanted to ask you, what was the thing that you thought it's going to be very hard to do, but it was actually really easy?
Well, I'll tell you, first of all, what I find hard to do.
Mm-hmm.
So in my photography, undertaking product, still life, advertising type work, it's challenging, but I always know that I'm going to accomplish the result because I know what to do. With fashion photography, it's much more challenging for me because the process is very, very different. Because I think with fashion photography and good fashion photography, you have to be good with a team. You have to work with a stylist, a hairstylist, makeup, clothes, the model, assistants, etc. And you have to be able to manage that team really well, communicate your ideas very well. And the stress levels, if you like, of working on a large scale fashion project are far greater for me than they are working on an advertising shoot with the clients in my studio. Because for me, the management of the project is easier because I know totally where I'm going to put the product, how I'm going to suspend it, how I'm going to light it, how I'm going to match the art director's brief. This is just second nature for me. And I'm only dealing with inanimate object that isn't going to talk, isn't going to move. But when I move into fashion photography, I love the challenge and I enjoy it, but it is a much more stressful type of shoot for me compared to what I'm familiar with. So it's interesting, even though I have the knowledge on the lighting and the photography aspects of a project, sometimes those aren't the only challenges. The other challenges are people management, depicting the story and the narrative and working with a team and a crew and getting everyone working together and enthusiastic. You know, there are many, many skills outside of photography and outside of the photography knowledge that are equally as important to the success of the project as well. Just interesting when you think about different genres of photography.
This is just so funny for me because I'm exactly the opposite. I was smiling the whole time you talked because every time when I have to work with other people, I feel so good.
Good.
Yeah. And when I have to shoot a product, I don't have the patience to do that. I mean, I love good product photography. I love to look at it. I love to analyze it and to think about the process. But when I have to do it, if there are no, like, a crowd of people around me that I can talk to, I'm simply bored because this object is not able to talk.
That's amazing. You see, for me, it's the opposite because I see the object as like a puzzle. It's like a Rubik cube that has to be solved. It's some sort of puzzle that has to be unlocked. And I know that I'm going to be able to unlock it by using physics to solve the problem. So I enjoy the process of solving the lighting problem and solving the puzzle to create the image that the art director wants. And that's what I find fascinating, whereas I find the fashion element fascinating, the lighting and everything else, but I find it more stressful dealing with all the people.
That's just so funny. We can make a comedy show, but it has to be video. And for a day, I'm going to take your role. And for a day, you're going to take my role.
Yeah.
And people won't stop laughing.
That would be good, wouldn't it? Because that would be quite entertaining, is seeing different photographers' stress levels depending on their comfort zone.
We're going to be sweating all day.
Yeah.
Oh, that's going to be so funny. And tell me, can we see you on some live events, like doing some speaking gigs on conferences?
We do live events online on my education platform every month. We have a guest on the talk show usually, and we do a live photo shoot show. But I'm in Beijing in September with another very well-known photographer called Tim Flack. He's a very famous animal and fine art photographer. And I'm with him running a workshop in Beijing. just outside Beijing. So I'm looking forward to that. So if you're in China and you want to come to that workshop, then drop us an email and I'll put you in touch with the organizers of that one.
Oh, that is so cool.
Yeah, and then we're in Switzerland early September filming some things, but not a workshop. I think in November I've been asked to do a couple of speaking events, and I've got also a university that have asked me to do a speaking event. So my calendar changes, you know, depending on what's going on, but I'm not quite sure. I think I've got something as well for the BIPP, which is the British Institute of Professional Photographers, that they've asked me to maybe do a talk or something as well. But the next event where I'll be is in China, in Beijing. So yeah, looking forward to that one.
You're already on that level when people are asking you to do speaking gigs. Do you have any advices for the people that want to start having speaking gigs at conferences?
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. I think, first of all, you have to be comfortable with doing the speaking gig. Prepare your keynote or your PowerPoint presentation well. Get familiar with it. Include lots of nice images. Any video clips are also always welcome in a speaking presentation event. And then I would start small. Start with your local camera club. Or if you're visiting a new city and there's a photography organization there or something, they say, look, I'm going to be in town. This is my work. This is what I do. I'd love to come and do a talk for you and blah, blah, blah. And obviously don't charge for the talks, just offer to do them. And I think if you do that, one, it's great practice at communicating to a bigger and bigger audience. That helps you develop personally. As long as your presentation, I would always recommend having an element of humor in there. Don't make it all too serious. So it's great to talk some serious stuff and have some serious thing in there. But if you've got a couple of nice comedy anecdotes and moments that you can discuss and talk about as well, that always makes the crowd happy. Yeah, just sort of go from there, really. And then the more people that see you and know about you. And the other place is trade shows. I get asked a lot to talk as an ambassador for Hasselblad at various events, various trade shows. So you can also go to some of the brands potentially and say, hey, I use your lighting and this is my work. If you're looking for someone to give a talk, because sometimes some of the brands actually struggle to find enough people to even talk for them sometimes. So they might have a 4-day trade show and they've got 3 or 4 photographers lined up to give a 30-minute presentation. They may be happy to have another one, but it will come down to your work. You know, first of all, the brand, you need to use their brand, obviously, and there's no good talking to Canon audience if you're shooting on a Nikon. They're going to want you to using their brand, and they're going to want to see your work, and they're going to have to like your work before they're going to offer you a speaking slot.
This was a great advice, because they really need to fall in love with you first.
Yeah.
Many people are falling in love with photography, but also as their hobby. And it's very interesting. What is the hobby of the photographers?
My hobby is diving, shipwreck diving. So that's what I do at the weekends. I'm actually also working on a television documentary about shipwrecks at the moment.
Oh.
So what I do is I dive lots of old shipwrecks, some shipwrecks that are like 120 years old, some that are World War One or World War Two shipwrecks. And I video and film some of these. The reason I do video is because I don't want to do photography when I'm enjoying my other hobby, because otherwise it would feel like work. So I do video instead. I've been doing diving, shipwrecks and diving for many, many years now, probably 30 years or so.
Whoa.
Yeah, currently I've started work on a project where we've been investigating and researching some new shipwrecks or undiscovered shipwrecks. And we're trying to find some shipwrecks that weren't found before. And we're making a documentary about that search for these shipwrecks.
How did the idea come?
Well, just because I was doing this anyway, you know, diving and looking for this particular wreck. And then the more research that we did on the wreck and the history of it and trying to discover more about it and where it might be, the more we realize, well, actually, all of this research and this investigation is quite exciting. It's quite interesting, the history, the story of the boat and the crew and what happened and everything else. So I just thought, well, you know, while we're doing all this work researching, we might as well film it. And then obviously, if we find the shipwreck either this year or next year or the year after, because it's a lot of work trying to find these old ships, then if we find it, then we can film it underwater, and we can also film the process of looking for it and all the research we've been doing in the archives in the UK and in France. And it will just make a fascinating documentary. So that's basically where the idea came from.
So you talked to the television.
I've been on TV a few times as a sort of guest presenter on photography, on different photography related things. So I've got a few contacts in television, and really just reaching out to those contacts and saying, look, I've got this idea of this program. Now, they're not going to give you any money in advance for this. So this has got to be completely self-funded, and I've got to make this program. But at least I know the process and understand what is required to make an interesting documentary. And obviously, I have the ability and the facilities to do it and the equipment to do it. So I just thought, hey, why not? You know, if it takes us a year or 2 years to make this documentary, and then we put it together, and then we can present it to our contacts, and then it will be for them to decide whether or not it meets the standards that they require. So it's not 100% guaranteed, but, you know, I think it's 90% sure that it will be success if we manage to find what we're looking for.
I'm very fascinated just listening to that. So I'm very sure it's going to...
If you're interested, on my carltaylor.com website is a section called Film and Video, which is just short little short films, bits and pieces. I think the one at the top is called my sub-aqua and nautical showreel. And that's just a little example of the sort of filming work I do to do with the underwater world and the marine world, and that's nautical sort of environment. So that gives you a kind of taste of the sort of thing that we're doing.
That's awesome. And you guys also know how to find it now. It sounds like everything comes to knowing people and connections at the end of the day.
Yes, that obviously helps. But you make your connections over time. The longer you work in something and the more people you meet, then the more connections you make. I think it's very important from a business perspective to develop connections, to stay in touch with people, to keep a good database and a mailing list, and remind people of what you do and make sure that you're sort of in the back of their mind. Because if you maybe work for someone 2 years ago, but you didn't remind them of your work or the recent stuff you've been doing, then the next time they need a photographer for a project, they might not have remembered you quite as clearly as someone else they've worked with who has been reminding them and staying in touch. So I think the whole process of the business side and keeping in communication with your clients and your ex-clients and keeping a good mailing list and letting them know what's going on, that also helps keep contacts. I know people from years ago who were doing something else, and now they're doing something that is completely different. But because I still know them, I've got the contact, and yet what they're doing now could be useful for me as a connection. People change careers, people do different things, people get promoted, and someone that you were working with who was maybe more junior in the beginning may end up being the director in 20 years' time or whatever. So always good to build relationships.
And what about the bad clients? Can you recall any cases with bad clients and how you overcame these really, really uncomfortable feelings?
I remember early in my career, I think when you're starting out, there are some clients, not the big clients, but some clients when you're working with smaller clients, when you're starting out, you get those ones that don't want to pay you on time or arguing about the cost of the project and things like that. And my advice, and I've always done it myself, is I just get rid of them. If you know that you've done a good job and that you're being messed around, then don't give them the work. Tell them to get lost and don't deal with them again. Because if you spend too much time and effort dealing with negative people, people that are going to bring you down, it's just going to make you miserable. You just have to know when to move on sometimes as well. And I'm very lucky because the clients that I work with now, I've worked with the clients that I've got now for the last 15 years. So I know them very well. I have a good relationship with certain art directors and ad agencies and companies that I deal directly with. And you have a level of trust with them. And they know you. They know how you work. You know how they work. And it's a nice, comfortable relationship. But obviously, when you're starting out in photography, that, you know, you may be dealing with new people. You're not really always familiar with the good people and the bad people. I remember in the early days, sometimes dealing with new art directors who didn't really know what they were doing properly. And then they were saying, oh, I want to do this, this and this. And you're saying, well, hold on a minute. That's not actually technically possible. So you have to maintain a level of authority, but a level of politeness. You have to deal with people in a professional way. But no, bad clients, not so many, thankfully. But I think that's primarily because any bad clients I've had, I just don't want to work with them. So I just don't continue the relationship.
But we're going to continue our relationship with you because, Carl, this was an amazing interview and you gave us so much insight from your work and even your personal life with your hobbies.
Yeah, thank you.
It was so amazing to talk to you. I cannot wait to talk to you again soon.
Well, thank you very much. It was a real pleasure being interviewed, and it's nice for me to talk about these things as well in this format. So thank you.
That was it, the official end of our interview with Carl Taylor. And I know it's still August, and I know you're up for a vacation, but there is no vacation for the podcast because, as we said today, we're constantly learning. So we'll be waiting for you here next Wednesday with a bunch of new information and a brand new guest. If you're new to the party, don't forget to go to photographypodcast.net where you'll be able to find all of our previous podcasts and also some amazing articles written by our fans. If you want to have an article in our blog post, just email us and tell us about your ideas. Thank you guys so much for being with us today, and I cannot wait to see you next Wednesday.